Finance. Agenda 5/27/85, 8:30 a.m. Hearing Room A. Work session in HB 2011, HB 2182, HB 2183. Public hearing in HB 2151. Take 241, side A.
We have Democratic caucus and Republican caucus at 9:30, and I think the understanding of all the committee members was that we would have these bills prepared but not take any action on them until after we discuss them from with our caucuses. Presumably we would be excused from the second half of the caucuses for those caucuses that have caucus longer than 9:30 to 10:30, and then presumably be excused from the floor until we complete whatever action we decide to take this morning. What I think I'd like to do between now and 9:30 is to have Jim walk us through the three bills and any amendments that we have and any decision points that we have left beyond the obvious decision points that are in the cigarette tax bill and the $85 credit bill. So with that, Jim, why don't you you or your designee come up and let's walk through the three bills at this time.
Mr. Chairman,
could we have, as it go through these, identify the dollar amount to make some adjustments?
Okay. Do you understand that, Steve?
Yes. Okay, on House Bill 2011, you can find it behind the tab. You have a new set of amendments, -25, for should be behind the tab 2011. And then you probably have the old -20.
Where's the 2011 tab?
How about the toward the
when?
Okay. Back of the book.
Where does it look?
All right.
25.
You find -25 amendments.
Everybody click toward it.
Okay. -25 includes the changes that you made in the -24 last week. Okay.
By the way, appreciate all of you here this morning spending your Memorial Day with us.
Humor.
Another man gave him a little excuse.
I hope they make more money than we do.
Steve or Barbara?
On page 4, you have the language in section 15, line 6 of page 4, that deals with
page 4 of the -25 amendments.
Yes. All right, this deals with your non-itemizer charitable contribution provision. That's in current law, and what you're doing there is changing the date then from January 1, 1985 to January 1, 1987. So you're postponing any non-itemizer charitable contribution being taken on personal income tax returns for 2 years. And this was a gain of $15 million. On page 16, also on that same page 4, in lines 3 and 4, you have one of the changes being made to ACRS being eligible for any property placed in service on or after January 1, 1985, so that the language in taxable years beginning is deleted. Where is that again?
On page 4 of the dash 25 amendment.
Oh, okay, lines 3 and 4.
Yeah, just above where we were.
Okay.
And that change then is made one or two other places in the bill for the corporate side. It's the same language deleting in taxable years beginning. Okay, then on page 16.
Sam Hugo?
Steve.
Excuse me.
Line 3 of the amendments on page 4. Line 27, we're deleting in taxable. This refers to page 8 of the printed bill. Okay. So, section will be, this section shall modify the property placed in service on or after January 185.
Right, so this is the provision that prohibited the taking of ACRS before January 185. Right, so by having that,
I do trust you. I don't trust the other guy.
Date in there the way it is, then ACRS will begin on after January 185.
Mr. Chairman.
Sam Hugo?
On page 8 of the printed bill, section 13 deals with ACRS, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Current law.
Okay. So, line 27, we're referring to that section, and it reads, this section shall not apply to property placed in service on or after January 185. So, what does apply to equipment placed in service on or after January 185?
ACRS.
Okay, where do we find that, then? Does that clearly state that?
No, that's by your reconnect provision, right, Barbara?
Well, section, Mr. Chairman, Barbara Seymour from Legislative Council, ORS 316707, which is section 13 of the printed bill, which is the one you're talking about, says that ACRS does not apply.
Okay.
And all we're saying is that section is defunct for property placed in service on or after January 1st, 1985.
Isn't Chapter 316 personal income?
Yes. And then the corporate income is on page 9 of the amendments on lines 22 and 23. It's the same effect.
That was a $1.5 million impact too with that, as you recall. The next new language.
Steve, I didn't understand. What was the number?
$1.5 million decrease.
Going back to January 185.
Oh, okay.
All right. Same numbers.
Decrease from what then? So what's our ACRS figure then?
Yeah, that's good.
That was the 34. Well, a decrease from what you would
sure talk,
have put this. Decrease from what you would normally accept with ACRS causing under current law as it just starts.
Well, Mr. Chair.
That was good.
Steve. We've estimated that if we fully reconnect for basic, for starters, we're going to, with both personal and corporate, we'd raise $60 million.
Yes.
Now, are you telling me that would be 58.5 with this change?
Yes.
Okay.
At the,
well, Mr. Chairman, since then,
there are other changes, though, too, that there's both pluses and minuses that you made to that initial 60 figure, but it comes
still comes back to just about 60 million.
Mr. Chair, I guess I've got my question answered.
Chair. So after we get through all the pluses and minuses, we're going to still be at about 60, is that
yes,
correct?
Yes, 60 and a half, I believe, if I remember right.
Mr. Chairman.
James Hugo?
In addition to Representative Traherne's question, the charitable contribution is an additional 15 in addition to the 60.
Yes, that's separate.
Okay.
Well, where are we, Steve?
I think we're ready to go to page 16 of the Dash 25 amendment. This is the language that dealt with the definition of a single trade or business that was put together by your working group on Friday. Basically, you're saying here that for purposes of determining, again, whether two or more corporations that are part of the same consolidated term return are single trigger business can be determined by making reference, again, to corporations within the United States that are subject to federal income tax. So you're looking at what the Water's Edge corporations for determining whether any two or more corporations of the same consolidated return are unitary. But then you can, if necessary, take into account other corporations if there's a determination that there is any attempt to evade or avoid taxation. So this was the compromise position worked out. To try to, again, stay within the Water's Edge corporations that you're looking at, but if necessary, be able to look at corporations other than within the Water's Edge if there's any attempt to use those corporations to avoid taxation.
Mr. Tim Scott?
I would just say that I think we all kind of reached agreement on what we were attempting to do, and that was to limit the unitary relationships to companies located within the United States. But at the same time, we did not want to preclude the ability to go beyond the Water's Edge to make sure that somebody was not simply avoiding taxes by creating a phony foreign corporation for the sole purpose of avoiding taxes. And we think this language says that.
Okay, Steve.
Okay, the next change is on page 17. It's not an addition, it's a deletion. Page 17 of the Dash 25 amendments, lines 22 and 23, where some additional sections were deleted. This was the sections that dealt with the tax preference items for corporations, and you decided to go ahead and not allow 100% of the deduction, but again stay with federal law where that deduction is reduced by 20%. So you're adopting the federal change from reducing that deduction from 15% to 20%.
Sure. Jim Hugo?
Steve, would this be a part of the 60 again? Or is this an addition? And what is the impact of that?
The impact was was a negative $2 million that was part of the 60. Right? So by doing this, you're adding back two to arrive at the new total.
Is it 60, 62, or 58?
This is 60. Yeah, this is one of those pluses and minuses.
This was a plus, too.
This is a plus?
Yes. Okay.
At the last change, on page 19, section of the, again, of the Dash 25 amendments, beginning in line 11. It's this new section 48A that's part of corporate law, what you already had for personal income tax law dealing with pension plans, so that if there's any change in the federal law, that would not automatically disqualify the state treatment of the pension plan in terms of the contribution limits and so on. So what was or what is section 3 or 4, I think, for personal income tax in the bill was added, same language was added to the corporate side. Be sure to catch it on both sides.
Questions? Discussion? Could you list for us, then summarize for us, the initial estimate was $60 million. Could you itemize for us the subtractions and additions of that original $60 million, and what items caused those subtractions and additions? Do you have that summarized?
Well, basically, it's just... You had the January 1 ECRS, right, no reference to the tax year that started, and then you had the corporate
this number doesn't jive.
Tax preference items. The rest of the changes in the Dash 24 were all incorporated into the beginning 60.
Oh, okay. For all.
Mr. Chair.
All right, let me add to
this. Representative Traynor?
Okay, charitable contributions have always been separate.
Right.
That are now part of... The number has always been separate, but it's part of this bill.
Steve, originally we broke that 60 down to 40 on the personal and 20 on the corporate side.
Yes.
Could you give me, how would that break out with these changes?
Said in your taxable year beginning or after January 1, so if you had a corporate taxable year that
would be long Steve, what about the interest exclusion?
That's for Mary.
That's for you.
Okay, thank you.
Are you asking about the I want to make sure what interest we're talking about here.
Personal,
the 200-400 interest and dividend exclusion?
Yes. Is it?
Not part of this.
Okay, you show the charitable contributions as a separate item down there, 15. Why aren't we showing the interest exclusion as a separate item of 22?
It's not part of your Dash 25 amendments. To do anything to that.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Where is it?
It's nowhere.
Just ignore it.
Anything further on House Bill 2011? Okay, let's set this one aside for now.
Representative Hugo, would it be appropriate to move the 2011-25 amendments and then hold Black and Caucus?
Yes.
I would move the adoption of proposed amendments, House Bill 2011-25.
Representative Hugo moves the -25 amendments. Is there an objection to that at this time? We're willing to hold, if you'd like to, until after the caucuses, but if there's no objection, we could go ahead and insert those amendments into the vehicle. Representative Hostica?
I just had one question. Does that also include the amendments that we were given from Jerry Bonner a long time ago? Were they included now in -25 or they accepted?
Steve?
Included. No objection.
Yes, sir.
Representative Scone?
Steve, I'm still confused a little bit on the charitable contributions and why you have these in these amendments but not the interest exclusion. It was my understanding in looking at the schedule of federal schedule that we were not connected to them anyway. And so if we were not connected, and we were not connected either for the interest and dividend exclusion, it seems to me that we should be treating them the same if we don't intend to do anything with them.
Do we need to take any action?
Under current law, the charitable contribution deduction would be allowed on a non-itemizer return. Right? The amendments to 2011 say no, that deduction will not be allowed.
Okay, why, Mr. Chairman, why does the why are we permitting that? Should we sunset a previous disconnect or something?
Right, federal law allows a non-itemizer charitable contribution. The 83 legislature said no, we will not reconnect to that federal provision for tax years 83 and 84.
Got it.
It does sunset at the federal level January 1, 1987.
Currently, yes, unless they change.
Further discussion on the amendments? Is there an objection to the adoption of the -25 amendments? No? Let's see, let's go to the cigarette tax.
Good luck. How do we get pie tobacco in this bill?
Oh. The gates with legislative revenue.
Hi, Dick.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Okay.
What's the bill there again?
The bill that we're dealing with is...
Some of us are having a hard time making this transition back into reality or irreality.
2183. And you should have two sets of amendments to that. The current 2183-5 and 2183-7, which we handed out this morning.
Okay, we don't have either set of amendments. We took them from our books and...
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, the 2183-7 was distributed this morning?
Yes.
Has been distributed?
Yes.
Do we need the -6?
No. -6.
Well, or did you say -5?
5. You need the
-5?
Yes.
Okay, do we have an extra copy of 5?
I'll share.
Nobody has fun.
This is inside. Was it right in front of the book?
It's not loose.
Mighty wind, man.
2276. The hand and rope top. In your pocket.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's me. Why you know? I've done the same thing I did. Take out the phone and rip it off into
the light. You don't have to take the exposure you used to.
Everybody's got it on the head.
left clear blue skies this morning, too.
Oh, really? To that.
That's the second time he's mentioned that.
I was over near the coast yesterday. I was there over there.
Really?
Okay.
Okay, the amendments basically rewrite the bill so we can look at the amendments themselves without looking at the bill.
Okay.
Okay, the Dash 5 amendments raise the permanent cigarette tax from 9 cents to 27 cents.
We should have said that differently. Or something, maybe.
The increase in the current rate, of course, is only from 19 cents to 27 cents.
But the increase in net rate is zero.
the way this is done, in Section 3, there's a temporary tax which is enacted between October 1st and December 31st. Of 8 cents, okay, and that picks up presumably the federal 8 cent decrease. Then the entire 27 cents is written into the law permanently as of January 1st, 1986.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Sections 4, 5, and 6 essentially impose a floor tax as of October 1st to pick up the additional 8 cents on cigarettes that are in retailers' hands. All of the money from the floor tax plus all of the money from the 8 cent temporary tax go into the state general fund. Okay? Then there is no correction or no amendments here to 023455, which is how the money is distributed, because it remains exactly the same as is currently distributed. So that the 27 cents will be distributed 7/9 to the state general fund, 1/9 to the cities, and 1/9 to the counties. Okay, so that effectively the cities and counties are each getting 3 cents, and the state is getting 21 cents, beginning January 1st, 1986.
Could you walk us through the dates again, please, just briefly outline that? I see that that isn't what Jim's doing here. Could you talk to us about the effective dates again and the rationale for that?
Surely. Right now we have a federal tax which is 16 cents per package of cigarettes, total of state and local taxes which are 19 cents. So the total is 35 cents per package of cigarettes. The first scheduled change under current law is October 1st, 1985, when the federal, half of the federal tax sunsets, so it's reduced by 8 cents. The second scheduled reduction is the sunsetting of the state's 10-cent tax, and that's January 1st, 1986. So we would return to 9 cents, federal would be at 8, so the total would fall to 17 cents from 35. Okay, now what we've done with this set of amendments is to come in and pick up the scheduled 8-cent decrease in the federal tax as of October 1st, and then to continue the 10-cent state tax after January 1st. So we've maintained the rate at 35 cents, essentially, per package of cigarettes, the total combined federal and state rate, assuming the federal does sunset.
I remember, did we speed up that 6 months? 83, 85?
No.
If the sun
still sunsets, 8 cents. I know it's there, but I want to get repeated once more. If the feds don't sunset, you pick up the additional 8 cents anyway. Is that correct?
That's correct.
At that point, we're at 43 cents.
Then, right? Then we're at 43 cents more.
Right.
Keep saying when you get to $4, isn't it?
Well, let's see. So, Hugo, Representative Hugo, would like to move to amend the times it by 10.
Not unless we put all the forms of tobacco on the tax.
In the back of your book with the original 2183, there is a chart there which shows Oregon relative to some other states, if you're interested in fact rate. The second set of amendments, the 2183-7, now, do essentially the same thing as the Dash 5, except that they're going to take 1 penny, essentially 1 cent, away from the cities and counties and distribute that to a elderly and handicapped special transportation fund. So in addition to the changes that are in the slash 5 amendments, we have in section 9 of the amendments the creation of the elderly and handicapped special transportation fund, and in section 10 the way in which the public transit division is going to distribute the money from this fund to transportation, mass transit, and to the counties, depending upon how transportation services are provided. If there's no transit or transportation district in the county, the money goes to the county itself. There's 27 of those counties that would fall into that category. Where there's a mass transit district in the county or serving a portion of the county, the money's going to go to the mass transit district. So for all of the money, okay, so let me back up for a second. The money is going to be distributed proportionately with population to each county. Okay, so there'll be some share of money which is due to Multnomah County, Clackamas County, and Washington counties. All of that money will go to TriMet. There'll be some portion of the money which is due to Polk counties and Marion counties, and all of that money would go to the Salem Mass Transit District. And all of the money which would be due to Lane County would go to the Lane Transit District.
Sections that goes into, but that would be for both personal and corporate.
Do you have those sections on the tip of your tongue, Jim, or do we have?
Barbara should be here.
Barbara?
It's here, Steve.
Steve, would you please come up? Dick, would you please get Barbara for us? Thank you. Steve, we have a motion before us to alter the effective date to make it effective 1/1/85. What sections of the bill would need to be amended to reflect that change if, in fact, the committee were to adopt the amendment?
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
We'll want the retroactivity, Steve.
Mr. Chairman, that would be section 13 on page 8.
On which portion? On ACRS?
No, on everything.
Page
8. Well, 84 versus the 85 retroactivity question.
Oh.
On the whole bill.
Oh, I see. All right. Yes, I know what you're asking now. Should be, let me check this. In the amendments. Problem is things have moved around in dash 25 from where they were in dash 24. Okay.
I have section.
Dealing with the 84 Tax Reform Act is section 50 on page 19. I think that's what you're looking for.
That's in the dash 25 amendments.
Yes, it is.
Section 50, page 19.
That's dash which amendments?
Dash 25, section 50, page 19 and 20. So that just require 84 to 85. Let's see. Okay, what change would we need? What change would we need to make to reflect the Trahern motion to amend?
I think you would just have to. Again, I would want to check with Barbara on this, but I think you would have to delete section 50, and then 49 also, which is just inserting section 50 into URS.
Is your understanding, Jim?
Yeah. Mr. Chair.
Jim Trahern?
I would move to delete sections 49 and 50.
Representative Trahern moves to delete sections 49 and 50. Do you want to speak to your motion, George?
Well, Mr. Chair, this requirement would require the taxpayers who filed returns on April 15th of this year for their 1984 tax returns under the proposal would be required to amend those returns because we have since changed the law for 1984. The deletion of the amendments would put the reconnect issue in front of us for 1985, but not for 1984.
Okay. Let's see, I'd like to speak to the motion too. Steve?
It was pointed out to me that 49 and 50 deal with the personal side, so you have to also include in that section 51 and 52 for the corporate side if that's the...
Friendly amendment, George, or would you just like to do it for personal?
No, I'm Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Representative Hossaker?
Can I ask a couple questions before we
certainly
deal with this? As I understand it, corporations don't always operate on the calendar year for tax purposes. And so could you indicate what happens with corporations who may be operating on different calendar year or different tax years, when they might be filing, and whether there may be corporations whose tax years coincide or include dates where the federal changes may have occurred, so that those corporations wouldn't necessarily be filing amended returns but haven't filed their returns for their tax year yet? Is there any possibility in that regard?
Yes, I think so. Since the 84 Tax Reform Act is keyed upon the transaction date itself and not the tax year, so if that transaction date was, say, September of 84, right, and their fiscal year maybe went from July to June, then that would be in that fiscal year, and probably have not filed that return yet.
So the fear that is raised by Representative Trahern of people having to go back and amend returns may not apply to a number of corporations. Would that be a correct assumption?
That's possible, yes.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to speak also to the motion. Recognizing, first of all, that if we adopt Representative Trahern's amendments, that will be a reduction of approximately $5 million in revenue impact of the measure, so it would reduce it from 60.5, excluding the non-itemizer charitable contribution deduction, to 55.5. I will support the motion. Frankly, we're trying as hard as possible to create a bipartisan package or get as much bipartisan support as possible, and we did have caucuses from 9:30 to 10:30 and actually spilling over to 11 o'clock for the purpose of discussing this package, these three bills and the items included, with our respective caucuses. And I think it became abundantly clear to me that the minority caucus felt quite strongly that the retroactivity provision should not be in House Bill 2011, and in attempting to get as much bipartisan support for a final solution as possible, I spoke with the Speaker, and in fact the Vice Chair and I spoke with the Speaker, and she indicated that she would support this committee's action if this committee decided to eliminate that retroactivity provision to facilitate as much bipartisan support as we can generate. So I think Representative Trahern's motion is a sound one. Now, recognizing that we have people really on both sides here, there are some that anticipated Oregon reconnection and filed 84 returns with that in mind. There are others who did not. Frankly, in my own viewpoint, those corporations and those tax consultants, CPAs, whatever, that prepared those returns, probably the more sophisticated corporations, the larger, more sophisticated firms were the ones that probably anticipated the reconnection. Those with less information readily available to them probably not. So I think in balancing the retroactivity versus no retroactivity, it's probably a good policy decision, and I can support the motion made by Representative Trager and Representative Hoskin.
Yeah, well, in your discussions, Mr. Chairman, did you get any indication of whether a reduction of the revenue impact by $5 million would cause a review of the expenditure packages that have been discussed with members of both caucuses, or would that $5 million come from?
Well, presumably that $5 million
could come from a variety of sources. That was not specified, but frankly, I would presume that it would come from the monies remaining at the end of this entire equation that would be available for other expenditures, PTR, if there are other budget items that are very important, it would probably be there. It's possible it could come out of budget items. I would think that would be highly unlikely and probably the least vulnerable. It's also possible it could come out of the prudent person reserve, but I would think that it would come out of that ending balance available for other property tax relief programming. Representative Burroughs?
The dollar amount was never the issue, and it was a policy question of whether we wanted to require people to go back and refile. It was evident that the CPAs wanted us to go back. It was evident that the department wanted what we're proposing. I'm convinced that whatever we do, it will require people to refile. But it was never the dollar amount. It was a policy question whether we wanted to require people to go back and to require the department to for the department to go back. And they said they would in subcommittee and before this committee. So it was a policy decision and not a dollar question.
Mr. Chairman,
I guess I'd like to respond to that a bit because the as indicated from the testimony we received, there are good reasons to go either way on this.
Yes.
And the dollar amount is in the total context of what we're looking at not all that great. However, the fact that we're sitting here today ready to move on this stuff is based upon a number of discussions and assurances and assumptions and a few guesses and hopes of people as to what is going to happen on both sides of the equation, both the revenue and the expenditure side. And if we start upsetting that series of assurances that people have made to each other and to themselves, then I guess I don't know whether we're ready to move or not. It would be my hope that your statement is correct, that the expenditure side of the equation, which has been laid out to both sides, will remain firm, and that any reductions in revenue that are made or any additions that are made by actions that we take today will come out of the extra money that has been set aside for PTR purposes.
Well, it's certainly my understanding, as I indicated to you earlier, I think the least vulnerable would be the budget. Probably next would be the prudent person reserve, and probably most likely would be that surplus available for other expenditure. It does affect 2% of the package that we're talking about today. My understanding, I've had discussions with the vice chair and the other members of the minority caucus, my understanding, and this is the single item that they felt most strongly about. Certainly we'll be debating some other items before us, but I think that this is in a different context than any of the other items that we'll debate, and I don't believe this upsets the apple cart. I think we can move forward confidently. I think this is a blip, not a major change. It would probably be the best of all worlds if we didn't have to make this change, but it appears that in the spirit of bipartisanship, we probably ought to give it our best shot in trying to make that change.
Mm-hmm. What was your trigger?
Steve, what percentage of corporations file in their calendar year?
I don't think I have that data with me, but in terms of just numbers of corporations, it's fairly high. Most, again, I don't have percents at my fingertips, but most of the tax years begin in the first 6 months of the calendar year.
Mr. Chairman, I was willing to support wholeheartedly Representative Trahearne's original motion, which was to delete sections 49 and 50, which deals with ORS Chapter 316, the personal income tax, and that's what I thought we were doing. I feel, as Representative Trahearne does, obviously, that those people who file their 84-year returns should not be penalized because we've moved the goalposts. But when we include Sections 51 and 52, we're not talking about the corporate income tax, and I'm not convinced that many corporations are going to be unduly hurt by the reconnect. In addition, we've also made two concessions to corporate taxpayers. One, the ACRS disconnect, generally,
And a second decision within the ACRS is when that ACRS connect occurs. We've spent $35 million on ACRS for corporations, and now we're asking to spend some more money on corporations, and I'm not too sure if that really makes sense. As far as personal income taxpayers, no problem. But I guess the real question, you know, the five, how much is personal and how much is corporate?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Trahan?
Maybe Steve wanted to respond to that first.
How much is, do we have the five, can you break that down to personal and corporate?
I would say three personal and two corporate.
George?
Mr. Chair, I think that we have to recognize there are a lot of corporations, particularly smaller family-owned corporations, that do operate on a calendar year as individuals do, and I think those are the folks that could be most affected. I would also point out to Representative Hugo that other changes we made this morning in the package raised the amount of dollars that corporations were going to be putting into the reconnect from 20 to 21 million and reduced in effect the personal end from 40 to 39 and a half. Now those are not major changes, but that other million, and I'm not sure it's coming out of the same corporations, give or take, but that other million does help offset part of the change there, too.
In fact, the net in this package would be, from the original numbers we were looking at, 20 for corporations to 19, and 40 for personal to 36.5.
And that's not, from your perspective, a terrible shift.
Representative Clory?
Well, I was only going to say that at the time that we realized a day or two ago that we were being asked to do this kind of retro kind of filing, I was really concerned about this kind of a policy and about the kind of reaction that this whole package would get because of that kind of a policy. And I think we had somewhat of a test of that when we went and shared it with the other members of our caucus and got what I would consider to be quite a violent reaction. And there were a couple of members who asked a number of times, how do you possibly justify that? How do you explain it? What is the policy that you're setting, and how can you possibly explain it to us or to anyone else? And frankly, we had a hard time doing that. And so I think that I clearly will support this motion because of the fact that I think that it is a very supportable approach to make this change and extremely difficult to justify to not make it.
Representative McCracken.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I want to reiterate that the CPAs were very firm. You know, they felt the retroactive nature of the act ought to be enacted into law, and they thought it was good, sound policy. And I'd just like to place on the record again the kinds of taxpayers we're talking about who might have to refile their forms. And I recall those were fairly exotic type returns, not the normal everyday taxpayer. Cool. So could I have staff respond to this? Just the example.
We there's a call to the House.
Oh, sure.
We move on, amendments.
Yes.
On the motion.
Yes.
Sure. Let's see. Let's just go ahead and ride this out for a moment. Representative McCracken, question of staff.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll send the state police after us.
Most of those changes that the department had in their information would apply to fairly unusual circumstances in terms of the kind of taxpayer you're talking about, but not always.
So, Mr. Chairman, people who use the Internal Revenue Code to the fullest, to their advantage, basically.
Representative Hostikin, if we could, why don't we...
One question for staff, maybe then this could be something while we're on the call. Is there a way to write this so that if the change occurred within a taxable year for which somebody hasn't yet filed, that those changes would affect them but not the other people who may have already filed, that have closed the books on their taxable years? Is that technically possible?
Mr. Chairman, Barbara Seymour from Legislative Council. Yes, there's a way to technically write that. You wonder if that's again, you're giving an advantage or a disadvantage to those people who didn't file timely, of course, because you're talking about the 1984 taxable year, and it's April 15th has already gone by.
But for corporations that don't use the
calendar year. That are on a fiscal year basis, yes, I'm not sure how many corporations are on a fiscal year or calendar year basis.
Mr. Chair. Representative Hilgren, I think Barbara misread Representative Haas's question. The question was, for those who've already filed, we want to hold harmless. Those people who have not filed for their 84 tax year would be filing under the provisions of this bill. Is that possible?
Yeah.
Same
question. Yes, it's possible. Yes, the one thing that isn't very, I don't have any immediate legal reaction to that, but my legal reaction is that it seems like if you're talking about a taxable period, you should be treating everybody the same. And our tradition has been that if your return is filed within a certain calendar year period or beginning in a certain calendar year period, that everybody in that calendar year period is treated the same.
Our colleagues are becoming impatient. Do you want to discuss the motion more after the call, or would you like to vote on the motion now?
We'll fix it on the Senate.
Please call the roll on the motion.
I'd rather discuss it on the floor.
Representative Scalari?
Aye.
Hannum?
No.
Hostica?
No.
Hugo?
Aye.
McCracken?
No.
Steen? Trahan?
Aye.
Where is
the governor's office?
Burroughs?
Aye.
True.
Aye. We did. Motion adopted.
We're in recess until we make an announcement of the form of return.
To cast a ballot on the Representative Trahan amendment, or any members of the committee who wish to change their vote to be able to do so at this time. Representative Schoon, how do you vote?
I vote aye.
Are there any other
Chairman?
Representative Hostica?
Yeah, I had a question that I don't think it's adequately addressed, but since then I've received additional information on the subject. I'd like to change my vote to yes.
Representative Hostica changes from no to yes. Any further considerations of prior votes?
Mr. Chair.
Representative McCracken?
Changes to aye.
McCracken from no to yes. Any further?
Are you unanimous?
Does this mean I'm back in the caucus?
Back in the caucus again?
Okay. All right, anything further? If not, order those votes.
Mr. Chairman?
We now have the amended bill 2011 before us. Representative Hostica?
Yeah, I'd like to suggest an additional amendment and finding the proper place. I think that it relates to some amendments that we adopted that had to do with the effective date of the ACRS reconnect. And the question is similar to the question on the motion by Representative Trahan that we just adopted, was if you pick a certain date, that means people may be going back and amending returns or have partial year effects on the ACRS reconnect. What had happened was originally the bill said we'll reconnect four taxable years beginning on or after January 1st, 85. That means that whenever a corporation or an individual corporation's most instances start their taxable years, they would be then reconnecting at that point to ACRS. The committee in adopting amendments changed it back to January 1st, 85, so that if corporations were in the middle of a fiscal year or nearing the end of a fiscal year, that it would affect a part of their return only or part of the fiscal year that they were in. So I think for consistency's sake, we ought to be going back to the original version, which would have it so that whenever they start their fiscal year, they're reconnected, but not this partial, potentially retroactive, potentially prospective thing that we adopted.
Senator Scott?
We asked about that and spent, I guess considerable time discussing that in subcommittee, and I think that I, at least, I can't speak to the other committee members, had the same idea that you're expressing right now, that you would want to do it for a fiscal year rather than some indeterminate period. But the CPA's assured us that it was more important to have it for items placed in use after a particular date. And as far as it complicating the
returns of the taxpayers, apparently that is not a problem because each individual item is put on an individual schedule for depreciation purposes anyway. And so they were not adamant about it, but they were very clear that the proper way, in their opinion at least, was to have it for equipment that was put into a park into use after 12/31/04.
Mr. Chairman?
Jim Kostika?
Well, with all due respect, I'm happy to hear some of the things you've said, because if you say each item is placed upon its own individual depreciation schedule, I think the whole argument for disconnecting or reconnecting on ACRS falls apart, which says that it's too much bookkeeping. You're saying the bookkeeping is going on anyway. I would say that at this point, the question of additional bookkeeping then doesn't arise, and it's just a matter of whether or not we believe we ought to be giving this additional advantage in terms of allowing people to go back and amend into years which that date may allow them to go into, rather than just saying if they have a different schedule for their own tax calculation purposes, they ought to adhere to it consistently on ACRS as well as other matters.
Mr. Chairman. Jim Scott? They would not have to go back and amend, because unless their fiscal year happened to end between 1984 and the time that we adjourn and pass this legislation and it becomes law, there would be some few people that might have to amend in that case. But the problem with being disconnected is that they have to maintain two separate schedules for each item of equipment when they have to maintain one for the state and one for the feds. That's why it's additional work.
Jim Trainer?
That covered it.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, any further discussion, Jim Trainer?
Was that a motion for that or just a suggestion?
What's this?
Well, at this point, it was an item for discussion.
Mr. Chair,
I would move House Bill 2011 as amended to the floor with the due back.
Okay. Representative Hugo?
Can I ask President House for a clarification of what your suggestion was for discussion? What were you asking?
Let me see if I can explain it.
Let me see if I can explain it.
The on ACRS, we adopted a provision that would require that any equipment placed in service after 1/1/85 be subject to the reconnected federal provision, as opposed to any equipment placed in service beginning after the fiscal year, after the beginning of a fiscal year for the entity who's placing the equipment service. Does that explain it?
Well, that technically explains it.
On page 8 of the printed bill,
mm-hmm.
lines 27-28, where we believe the words "in taxable years beginning," you're suggesting restoring that language?
That's my suggestion.
Any further discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Jim Hostica.
Just to get the sense of the committee, I'll make a motion to restore that language on page 8, which says, I believe it was line 21 on page 8, lines 21 and 20.
I think it'd be lines 27 and 28.
27 28, that's right. It says, this section shall not apply to property placed in service in taxable years beginning on or after. I'd have to move that we go back to that language.
Let me just get it straight again.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Hugo?
Well, I also ask Representative Hoss if you'd want to make the same change on page 15 in section 26, page 15, line 38.
Could we?
Yes, if whichever one applies to personal, it probably wouldn't make any real significant
difference. Stephen, Barbara?
To be consistent.
Oh, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hugo?
Representative Hoska's suggestion or motion on line on page 8 of the printed bill, line 27-28, applies to personal, and on page 15, line 38, restoring in taxable years beginning would apply to corporate. I would assume you would want to do both.
Mr. Chairman,
Hoska?
I would want to do both, but as I think is clear, Hugo, for most individuals, the taxable year begins on January 1st, 85, so that the effect on individuals would not be significant. It wouldn't, if
the effect of my amendments would not really apply to personal, but for consistency's sake, I think it should be for both.
Could somebody restate for the committee why the provision that we've done for effective date for the reconnect would not also be an appropriate decision for effective date of the reconnection with ACRS?
My point, Mr. Chairman, was just so that any equipment placed in service after January 1 of this year would be treated under ACRS. That was the point. And regardless of when the tax year was for that payment.
Mr. Chairman? Sam Scott?
Well, this is, I suppose, a good way to raise some additional revenue is to delay the implementation of ACRS for certain companies. But it's not just a one-year tax effect either. This goes on for a period of years. And the equipment that you put in service, you establish the depreciation schedule immediately. You don't wait until the end of the tax year. And so it would be more consistent, more appropriate, I think, to use the words placed in service rather than refer to the tax year.
But we presumably could be going back to a prior fiscal year for ACRS where we're not going back to a prior fiscal year for the other provisions of the reconnect.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like that there's a contradictory policy statement there if, in fact, by the nature of the decision, there is a contradiction between the two decisions that are being made in the bill.
Mr. Chairman?
Sam Scum?
I don't think that's right, but I'll defer to Steve on that. I think we do probably reconnect for some other items as of 12/31/84 or after that date. And so there would be other items that could be affected. And somebody that had already filed a tax return between that date and date becomes law.
Is the treatment for ACRS and for the other provisions of the reconnect after we've adopted the Trahern Amendment prior to adoption of the Hostica motion? Is there a discrepancy in treatment there?
I'm getting lost in this, but
Jim, jump in if you feel so inclined.
See what Steve has to say. The Trahern Amendments take you take away going back in the 1984 and making any of those changes applicable to 84.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But if on the ACRS side, if it's only going to apply to any property placed in service in 85, which, as the bill is now, could affect an 84 tax year for a fiscal year taxpayer. Whereas the Trahern Amendment I think could still affect an 84 fiscal year taxpayer.
Yeah. Yes, go ahead.